shining sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. That's a guarantee. I'm here because it matters, and so do you. Tonight is a very special night. First of all, it's Friday the 13th. Have you noticed that yet? And, you know, Friday the 13th is always a good day for us. I don't know why that is, but Friday the 13th is never unlucky for the Kevin Smith Show. It's always a good day for us. So we're expecting it will be today as well. But it's also a special day because this is K-Files night. That means after the show tonight, immediately after the show, I will begin sending out the K-Files e-zine to thousands of people around the world. And if you have not yet subscribed, you still have time. You can do it right now by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and just click on the little button with the red letters that says K-Files e-zine. Now, it takes about... depends on how fast you type, probably 5 to 10 seconds to put in your email address and your first name. And then you're going to get automatically a confirmation email at the address that you put in. It will have a confirmation or activation link in it. You have to click that. And then you can get this edition of the K-Files e-zine. All right. So the whole thing, you know, you 5 to 10 seconds to subscribe. You're going to immediately get the confirmation email. It's going to have an activation link. Click it. You're in. That's it. Whole thing. What, 30 seconds maximum? And it's free. Absolutely free. It's our free weekly newsletter. You want to be sure that you get on the list before this show is over, because at the end of the show, we start sending out the K-Files e-zine for this week. Now, have you seen the survival meter? Let me just make sure that you have. We are behind a little bit, not a whole lot, but we are behind the pace on what we've got to do by the end of the month. Now, what you don't know is we were within 24 hours of having to vacate the studio last month. And we made some emergency arrangements with a friend of the show for a temporary home until we could do something else. We were within 24 hours. It came down that close. Let's don't do that again this month. Look, if you've got an extra dollar, $5, $10, or $100, whatever you got, if it's, you know, you got an extra buck and you think, well, you know, I see a commercial on TV all the time. What can you get for a buck? Well, not much these days, but it can make the difference. It really can make the difference in whether we make it or not each month. And so you got an extra buck, kick it our way. We will be more than happy to put it to good use. in keeping us broadcasting. We'll be back right after this, so don't go away. My guest tonight is Jeff Woolline. He's been with us many times before, and we always have a very positive response, very strong response from our audience, and I think you're going to be pleased with what you're going to hear tonight as well. Always before, when we ask Jeff to come on, we have a lot of discussion about, and sometimes show some video clips or some still pictures of some of these strange things that fly around in the skies above Phoenix, Arizona. And it's, you know, I can't say that this happens every day, but it does happen very frequently here in Phoenix. And one of the most prolific videographers of these things is Jeff Woolline. We've also done a lot of talking about the petroglyphs that are etched into the stone out here on South Mountain. Some of you, some of our listeners, have come here and gone up on South Mountain and seen for yourself. Some of you have been up just with Jeff. Some of you have been up on South Mountain with me and Jeff, and in one case, with just me as the guide, because I couldn't find Jeff. But you've seen those petroglyphs. In fact, we had one listener that came all the way from Australia and went up on South Mountain with me and Jeff and saw the petroglyphs for himself. Well, the question is, who made those? Now, we're pretty sure we know who made them. But who are they? What do we know about these people? And interestingly, is there a connection between them and another ancient people, very ancient people, thousands of miles around the globe, people that you know as the Sumerians? Jeff Woolline, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Always honored to be here.
Jeff, South Mountain is, one person wrote to me this past week, it just seems almost like a magical place, such a mysterious place. And, you know, really, when you get out there and you start wandering around, surrounded by so many of these petroglyphs and other sites, other things that you may not know what they're for, but you can see that these ancient people stacked rocks in a certain way, and you know that geology didn't do it, they were stacked there. But you get out there and you get surrounded by all of that, and you really do get kind of a sense that you are in a very magical place. At least I do. Does it strike you that way?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you're on there, you can really feel that energy there, especially, you know, when all the energy is just right, you know, in certain times of the seasons. Sometimes it makes your hair stand on end.
Yeah, and well, and especially since you realize, I realize that I'm standing amidst not just artwork, but something that these ancient people felt was very, very important, crucially important, so that they didn't have videotape, so they marked it down by carving it or chipping it into the rocks. Jeff, when I talked with you earlier about some of the things that I was seeing, I mean, it just struck me. I was looking for photographs that had to do with these petroglyphs, And as I was looking for the photographs and looking through photographs, it struck me that, you know, I've seen that somewhere else. And I started looking at photographs from the Sumerian culture and found that there were some very similar markings, very similar depictions in the Sumerian. One of the things, now I don't have a picture of this tonight, but one of the things that you see out there is this swastika. But it's not the same as the Nazi swastika. It's turned the other direction. But you see swastikas out there. And I did a little research on that. And these appear in almost every ancient civilization all over the world. And the reason it's called swastika is in the ancient Indian language, swasti meant, it had the concept of sort of for the good of the world. Ka means, we put them together, it's the idea is a power for the good of the world, for everyone's benefit. Kind of a universal good thing. Now, as I say, these swastikas are not turned the same direction as the Nazi symbol. But when you see them, you immediately say, oh, that's a swastika. How is it that all the way across the ocean, you know, one of these days I'm going to learn not to destroy my studio here. I just knocked over my mic. How is it that all the way across the world over here in India, there are these same swastikas, and you find them in almost all ancient civilizations? You know, either they were all in touch with the same teacher, the same teachings, or they had to be in touch with the same gods, if you will, that for which this was some sort of symbol. What do you think it is?
Oh, absolutely. Pardon me. You know, I think that my honest opinion from investigating the petroglyphs and studying pretty much like what you're describing, the same artwork throughout the world, clearly these things, it started off in the sky. That's my opinion. The swastika was something that originally came from the sky, and they have been using the symbol for many different types of reasons. But I really believe that it originally came from the sky.
So do you think this is maybe a light pattern that was on the bottom of a UFO as it was landing, or what do you think it is?
Well, Kevin, you know my take on this. You know, a little bit of history on my part. You know, I went into this with an open mind. I'm thinking, you know, spaceships, technology, and I'm coming out of this going and thinking something completely different. Not to say that there isn't a possible technology life form on other planets, but from what I've been seeing out here on South Mountain and some of the other videos from around the world, this isn't technology at all. This is some kind of supernatural race, if you will. It's a creature. Jaime Masson likes to call them creatures down there in Mexico, and I seem to agree with this. We have these flying worms that seem to shift shape and morph in the sky. Sometimes they change color. Sometimes they look like a tubular shape. And I can understand if someone had seen this tubular shape up into the sky, they might assume that it could be some kind of craft, when maybe it could be another creature. So what I'm thinking is these swastikas was actually a UFO creature that was seen in the sky and was recorded on the rocks, and they took that symbol for many different purposes.
Now, I had a similar conversation with someone else, actually before I contacted you about doing the show. And I was in the beginning stages of putting all this together here. And this person said, because I was talking about, you know, all of these petroglyphs that seem to show flying serpents.
That's right.
And this person, and I was trying to put together, you know, that a lot of these symbols, you find them even in the Sumerian culture. And this person said, well, there is no record that the Sumerians had any gods that were serpents. And that's not true. He just didn't know. Because there are some ancient Sumerian, we would call them hymns, songs, where the lyrics talk about the great dragon of heaven. Well, the word dragon is the same word as serpent. When you trace it back to where does this word come from, it's the same word as serpent. And so the great serpent in the heavens, then you have these petroglyphs that show the same thing. Look, I tell you what I want to do. I want to give folks a little bit of a background on the people that drew these petroglyphs or carved them into the stone. Because I think it's important, folks, for you to understand that quite possibly this civilization was every bit as civilized as the Sumerians were. That's right. And you haven't heard of them. You don't know much about them. They were fantastically advanced considering the time period in which they were living and in which they ruled this valley. So let's start off with that. They're called, we call them today, the Hohokam. Now, it's kind of interesting where that comes from, Jeff. Because of you, I went and did some study and some background, and I found out something you probably already know. Hohokam is a Pima Indian word, and in fact, the Pima Indians are not actually Pima Indians. They are the Odum tribe.
Right. That's correct.
Now, here's what's interesting. There are two...
The desert, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, Odum means people of the desert. But that's a name that they adopted for themselves after the settlers started coming in. Prior to that, they were called the Akimel, A-K-I-M-E-L. And then they called themselves Akimel O'odham.
That's correct.
Well, Akimel, that looked kind of interesting. And so I did some research on it. And guess what I found out? It is a Hebrew name that means empowered by God. Now,
there you go.
Here's an interesting thing. Some people will say, well, it's just a coincidence. Well, maybe. But a lot of those petroglyphs match characters that you see in the Negev Hebrew language. Negev Hebrew is very ancient Hebrew. Okay? And so some of those petroglyphs match the same symbols that you see in the Negev Hebrew alphabet. Now, that kind of blew me away. And but there you go. You have Akimel, which means empowered or made strong by God. Akim, L-E-L, means God. Okay, now, maybe that's a coincidence. But made strong or empowered by God, the people of the desert. So, how empowered were they? Just how smart were these people? Where they were, folks, is right here in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix is setting, the whole Phoenix area is setting right on the Hohokam territory. It, of course, was bigger than Phoenix. The Hohokam territory covered about two-thirds of Arizona. But Phoenix is setting right on it. Now, that means South Mountain is setting right in Hohokam territory. And Jeff, do you know what is the number one city they had? What was the capital of this Hohokam territory?
Well, it had to have been right here in either Phoenix or...
Well, let me tell you, it translates into English, Snake Town.
Oh, there you go.
That blew me away. These people were geniuses, folks. They really were geniuses. They were farmers. They were not the hunter-gatherer barbarians that you suspect and that you think about because you've seen all these Western movies that depict the Native Americans that way. They were not. These people were farmers out here in the desert. Right here in Phoenix metro area, in what is today the Phoenix metro area, these people had 130 miles of irrigation canals. And they used a series of dams and weirs upriver to control the flow of water into this valley. And they were farming this valley. They grew tobacco and corn and later, much later, cotton, citrus fruits. These people were industrious and prosperous. Now, before we go to break, I'm going to do something. Right up here on the screen, for those of you who are watching on KSS-TV, you're now going to see what is called the Casa Grande, the big house. That is a four-story, multi-roomed, I don't know what else to call it. It's either a palace or an apartment house. But that was built by the Hohokam. It is located approximately 45 minutes southeast of Phoenix in the Hohokam territory. Now, that picture was taken in 1902, and as you can see, just the doorway on the front is about two stories high. This is made, as are many of the structures that I'm going to show you, out of what is called caliche. Caliche is a very hard clay that you can bake into bricks very easily. Actually, you can sunbake it into bricks. And So this has endured for all of this time. As you can see, it is somewhat in ruins, but that shows that these people really knew how to build a few things. Now, I'm going to show you some more that are rather spectacular. Sometimes they use stones to build. They also, Jeff, figured out a way to have air-conditioned houses out here in the desert. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, you probably did. You just didn't realize it in those terms. And I'll tell you about how they did it and show you a picture of one when we come back, right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jeff Woolline. Jeff, just before we went to break, I said you probably know about this, but nobody's ever just put it in those terms for you. In case you don't know, folks, out here in what we call the Valley of the Sun, there's a reason we call it the Valley of the Sun. In the summertime, it is like living in the suburbs of hell. It is hot. Now, it doesn't get really cold normally in the wintertime. Gets a little chilly, but not too bad. But in the summertime, temperatures can get up to, well, I've seen it at 121. And, Jeff, I don't know, were you living here when it hit 121?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That was tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like 115 in the shade.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's not abnormal for summertime here. That's a normal summertime here. So, these people were sharp. They were really smart. They built their houses in a construction that today we're calling them pit houses. Now, the reason we call them pit houses is because if you walk through the door of that house, you don't walk in to the floor. The floor is not level with that door. You step down about 3 feet. So that house is about 3 feet into the ground. The floor is. In the very top of that house, and this is a reconstructed pit house, it's made of adobe. In the very top, in the center of that, there's a hole. Now, the larger pit houses sometimes had two holes in the top. One was like an escape hatch. You could come in and out, and they had steps. The other one is for the smoke from the fire that they use for cooking and in the winter for heat. Inside of this pit house, if you open that door and allow the air to flow through that door and up that out that exhaust vent, if you will, in the top of it, the internal temperature of that house will stay below, generally speaking, below 95 degrees. Now, that may, you may think, oh, well, that's still hot. Well, Jeff, I think you can attest to this. If you're out here and it's 121 degrees and you can get into someplace that's 95, it feels mighty cool.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And so they had devised this way of building houses, and they built them in communities. The community, there would be all of the houses in the community would be constructed like this, around a central courtyard. And then they would have a large communal oven for cooking meat and bread. Very often, a communal well for fresh water, or a cistern. And they had a ball court. They played ball. I don't know exactly what kind, but they had a ball court for sports. Now, these would be in the villages. But this is certainly not the only type of construction they had. However, you've seen this before, haven't you? This looks familiar to you, doesn't it, folks? Because you've seen it in Star Wars. This is Luke Skywalker's village in Star Wars. It's actually in Tunisia, and what they did is built pit houses. Those are constructed in the same fashion as the Hohokam. By the way, you know, Jeff, I told where Hohokam comes from. It comes from the Pima language. I did a little study on that and found out that the Pima language, the Akimel Oodham language, is a dialect of Uto Aztec. And that can play a role in what we're discussing here tonight. We'll talk about it. But tell us what Hohokam means.
Well, like you were saying, the Pimas consider themselves, you know, ancestors to the Hohokam, and which it is a Pima name for the people who are gone, or the people, and what I like to say, the people who went missing.
Yeah.
Because they simply just vanished off the earth. If they simply moved somewhere, we could follow to where they went to, but it seems that they just left all of their belongings and
disappeared.
Right.
Yeah. Now, this next picture I'm going to show you, folks, really doesn't fit this. It's just something I thought was really interesting. This is off of the NASA JPL website, and it looks eerily familiar, doesn't it? It looks like a pit house made of stone instead of adobe. And that photograph you're looking at is straight off JPL NASA website. Has nothing to do with our discussion here this evening. But I do want folks to understand that these were very sophisticated people. Sometimes they built into pit houses, and sometimes they simply dug back into the crest of a hill, as we see in this picture. Now, if we see a picture of this over, if it's a satellite photo, everyone says, oh, that looks like ancient ruins. Now, if you see a picture that looks like this and it's from Mars, they say, oh, that's geological. That's just some geological formations. It just happens. It's an optical illusion. Well, okay. And I've got some beachfront property to sell you in Phoenix, too. Okay. Now, here are two examples. You looked at these today, Jeff, of some really sophisticated Hohokam buildings. Now, these buildings are built back into the opening of a cave in the side of a cliff. They're massive, absolutely massive. And I'm going to show two of these because, and there's a reason for that. The reason, and I'll tell you the reason before I do it, the reason is that I want you to see both the caliche clay construction, that's what you're looking at now, and here's one that is made of stone bricks. Now, when we looked at these today, Jeff, I pointed out that, I said, you know, the Hohokam ruled in this valley where Phoenix is now, all the way down to the Tucson area, and all the way up into northern Arizona, at the edge of what is today the Navajo Reservation. It's a big area. About two-thirds of this state was under the Hohokam. This was from AD 1 to about 1475. When the first Spanish explorers came through here, it was only approximately 100 years after the Hohokam had disappeared. And yet their buildings, their cities, were already, they were in ruins. Now, if we go back and look, we can see that these, many of their biggest structures are made of substantial building materials, and they're built into the mouth of a cave in the side of a cliff. And yet here we can see that there are signs that these buildings are in ruins. You look at the tops of these buildings, and they look like there's been some damage here. Now, the question I had for you today, and I want us to start with this, and then we're going to get into some of the petroglyphs and talk about them. But the question that I had about this, how did the buildings, the Hohokam, just disappear? Around 100 years go by, the Spanish explorers come, they find these magnificent ruins, but they are ruins. As if it looks like there's been a war of some kind. A lot of stones knocked out of place, and some of the villages look like they, you know, suffered some kind of warfare. But there's not anybody out here except some Pima Indians, some Odom Indians, and they're very friendly to the Spanish. And they tell the Spanish explorers, oh, no, those are not our buildings. That's from the people before. But there doesn't seem to be any record of war, except maybe in the petroglyphs. Tell us about that. Are you still with me, Jeff?
Yes. Well, are you talking about the
war? I'm talking about the war where there were magical instruments used.
Right, yeah. If you look at my website there, it's called petroglyphsinthesky.com. You'll see on the front page that there's a panel there, and it depicts what looks like a stick figure person with four arms. Now, he's holding this staff. Now, along with this panel, you'll see a regular stick figure man holding a bow and arrow, and he's shooting at something in the sky. Not only is the man with the bow and arrow shooting at something in the sky, but the four-armed stick figure man with the long magical weapon is also shooting at something in the sky, and it seems to be a flying serpent, if you will, some kind of half man, half snake. You can clearly see it has a head, it has some arms there, but its body is the shape of a serpent. Now, when we study the India legends, we run into the Vyamatis. Now, the legends and the folklores on the Vyamatis say that there was some kind of battle here between, let's call them the forces of good and the forces of evil. And these Vyamatis have, if you look at the India gods, if you notice all the limbs, matter of fact, there was a baby girl born maybe a few years ago, and she had all these limbs attached to her, and the India people thought she was a reincarnated god. And this is because of what had happened in the past of these supernatural gods, if you will, that interacted with mankind. And these people seem to be on the side of the humans, and they went to war with these other type of serpent gods, if you will, and were able to, let's say, put them back to where they belong for and until the time of the end, until their time to come out again. Now, the significance of that is it seems to coexist with the rock art on South Mountain here. It does show what looks like a war that did happen here.
Okay, Jeff, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. We'll pick up with that war when we come back. Welcome back. We're talking with Jeff Woolline. And, Jeff, these petroglyphs carved or chipped into the rock by the Hohokam show something that looks like a kind of a supernatural war. And you were telling us about this. You have the figure of, it looks like a man, but he's got multiple arms. He's got like four arms. And he's got this special staff. Folks, go over to Jeff's website. You can click his picture on my site, and it'll take you there. And there's a picture of this, and you'll see him. The staff that he's holding has kind of a elongated bulb on one end. And I'll tell you, Jeff, what it looks like. It looks like that weapon on Stargate SG-1 that Teal'c carries.
Yeah, doesn't it, though?
That's what it looks like.
Well, you know, some of this Hollywood movies that we see, I mean, you really got a question on where they got these ideas from. And it just seems to match some of these old folklores and legends and things of, like, the Vyamatis and you know, just legends, if you will, but, you know, you gotta question yourself, you know, where did they get the topics? How did they come up with this show? Well, maybe something in our history maybe gave them that idea.
What happened to these guys with four arms and the special weapons? Where did they go?
Well, it appears when we study the India legends on the Vyamatis, now after this war took place, these creatures, the good aliens, if you will, these Viamantes, these people with the four arms, they buried their magical weapons in the spots, in holy spots, because they knew eventually that they would have to come back again one day to reuse the weapons for these creatures, in my opinion, that we're dealing with today.
All right, and so this is the first place, folks, although I don't have a picture of it. Jeff's got it on his website, and I just didn't have time to get that one loaded. But I've got some more photographs for those of you on our TV channel. But this is the first place where we see something in these rocks that matches something we see in another ancient culture, the first place tonight, where it matches something in another ancient culture around the world. And that is these multi-armed beings with these magical staffs that they can shoot something at these sky serpents. How did the Hohokam know about that? Because what you're talking about in the Indian culture, ancient India, is thousands of years before the Hohokam and thousands of miles away. So I'm saying, is it possible that the Hohokam were seeing the same beings as those ancient people across the world saw before them? It would appear so.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, not only is it, what I find in studying all this, it's the same type of story, same type of legend, just maybe told just a little bit different. In seeing these creatures, for instance, here's another one, Kevin. You know how we have pyramids all over the world? I mean, it's the same type of structure.
Yeah.
I believe that the ancient ones, they saw the pyramid formations in the sky, and not only do they consider mountains holy, but they created their own mountain in the likeness of what they saw in the sky. It also represents an energy or power source for these ley lines that create energy for these creatures, for these UFOs, if you will. So it's the same thing. I mean, so now we have the same stories, the same type of legends, myths, if you will. And then we have the pyramids, you know, which these people had no contact with each other from across the world, but yet they're erecting the same type of structure, and they're talking about the same type of legend.
Yeah, they use different names for the gods.
Sure.
But the exact same stories about Thoth in Egypt show up in Central and South America as stories about Quetzalcoatl.
That's right.
You know,
that's
different name, same stories. All right, now look, I'm going to put a couple of pictures up here, and what we're looking at is some Hohokam jewelry and artwork that was found here in Hohokam territory in Arizona. It's a black and white photograph, so you know you can't see too much about how pretty this stuff is, but that's a lot of turquoise in that as well. But there's a shape there that I thought, you know, I've seen that elsewhere, and where else did I see it? Well, in the Sumerian depiction of their god, their chief god, this is An or Anu. In that depiction, the shape of it is very much the same as the shape in this Hohokam artwork that depicts their chief god. Now, I ask myself, is it just coincidence? It's just shape. We can't see much about the Hohokam art. We can't see much in it. Is it just a coincidence? Well, maybe. But I'm going to put up now, Jeff, a picture that you sent to me. And this is of the petroglyphs out, this is some petroglyphs out on South Mountain. In this What I've done, I don't have the whole picture in the frame. What I've done is I've zoomed in on one particular section because we're going to pay attention to that particular section. That section is the rock that's setting center top and the things that are there in the rock. Now, I want to say, first of all, that I have seen this shape of, it looks like, the one I saw, it looked like a barbell. It just had two of these orb things on it connected by a line between them. Looked like a barbell. I've seen that in the sky above Phoenix. We've talked about that before, and you've seen it as well, Jeff. But I want us to focus on that, and what we're going to do is to make this easy, to make it easier to compare, I'm going to switch from a photograph to a sketch of that rock, and now we're looking at a sketch of this same petroglyph. Here's what's interesting about this. These are all things in that one rock. These are all things that are up in the sky. And we know because down below them are things on the ground. You can see some, you know, animals and stuff on the ground. These are things up in the sky. And look at the different configurations that we have here of creatures. There's these lizard man looking things, and there's like four different configurations of those. There is this serpent looking thing, and then there's the barbell looking thing. Now, here's why that's important. That's important because whenever we compare it with other artwork from other ancient civilizations, look what we get. The picture on the right is one of these lizard men, and it's from Sumeria. And there's a red arrow pointed to the exact same configuration on the petroglyph that's out here on South Mountain. Now, that's not, Jeff, you can back me up on this. This lizard man drawing, there's not just one of those out there. They're all over the place out there.
Oh, that's correct. Yes, that story of the lizard people is all over the mountain here.
All right, now you've talked with some of the current-day Pima people. You've talked with some of the elders, and you've gotten them to tell you some of what these petroglyphs are about, and you've learned something about their story about these lizard people. Tell us about the lizard people. What's the story? Well, a break just took over. We'll be back, and when we come back from this break, Jeff, I want you to tell us about the lizard people. Who are they, and why are they important to the Native Americans? We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. We're talking with Jeff Woolline. We're talking about the Hohokam, a people that you may have not heard of, but maybe as significant to the Americas as the ancient Sumerians are to the what we would call the Middle East today. These were amazing people, and they had amazing stories to tell. Now, we just took a look at the petroglyphs of the lizard people, and I've asked Jeff to tell us, what do the Native Americans in this area say about those lizard people today? What do they say about them, Jeff?
Well, when I've asked the Pima, some of the ancestors here around the valley on the on the story here, they said that when they arrived here, when the Holocom arrived here, that they didn't know how to live. And so these lizard people emerged up out of the sand world, and some would say that they lost their tail because they wanted to look like everybody else. And they taught the people here how to live. And one of the, matter of fact, one of the Navajo traditions, one of the Navajo legends, is this spider woman, this spider entity, liked the people and actually taught them how to weave their baskets simply by watching the web. Now, when they were able to teach them how to live, they went back down into the sand world and promised to return someday. But these lizard people, from what I'm studying, from what I'm seeing here, it's like the Phoenix Lights and all these little barbell-looking things that are flying around. And this is just the tip of the iceberg on what's to come. If these lizard people is true, if we are supposed to take the petroglyphs and the legends and the myths literally, then these lizard people have yet to emerge out of the rocks. And from what I can tell up here and reading the glyphs up here, there's a lot of things that are still in these mountains here that have not yet been shown. And it's interesting on why all of a sudden, you know, the Indians, they tell us that we're in the fourth world, we're getting ready to enter the fifth. And it's interesting, ever since, oh, give or take, 1995, at least here in the Valley of the Sun, we started seeing these Phoenix Lights here. And then the big one in 1997 when everybody saw it. But you know what? Actually, Kevin, it's a regular basis out here. If you look at my website, I'm filming these lights all the time.
Yeah.
I'm seeing these creatures in the day. And it's interesting, how come they haven't came down and made contact with us and said they're here yet? You know, one of the news interviews here, one of the guys from Channel 5, he asked me, he's like, well, you know, they haven't made contact with us. You know, we should pose them as a threat because we don't know what they're doing. You know, what are they doing up there? They're letting us see us, but yet they're not coming down and they're not talking to us, you know. Well, why is that? And I believe that it's because we do not need them yet. I think something big is about to happen, and when mankind needs help, then they're going to see possibly these Phoenix Lights. Now, the petroglyphs show these supernatural beings, they like to morph, they transform, they like to look like people, they like to look like animals, if you will. And I believe that when this, let's call it a Holocaust, happens, there won't be any food, there won't be any water, but yet they're going to see these little red balls up into the sky, these Phoenix Lights, and one's going to come down, and he's going to turn himself into a man, and he's going to say, I'm here to help you. And man will be forced into, let's say, worship this creature to survive, because we need them. You see, we don't need them yet, but I think in the future, we will come back to these holy mountains for help and guidance, just like it was in the time of the beginning.
All right, now, out on the mountain, couple of things. The Phoenix Lights in 1997 was a spectacular display. But that exact same configuration of lights looks exactly like what people saw is in one of those ancient petroglyphs out on the mountain. You have a picture of it on your website.
That's correct. That's right.
All right. Also, you're talking about these things morphing. There are petroglyphs out there that show stages of one of these lizard men materializing. So you see a very faint sort of outline of one of the lizard men, and then you see next to it, you'll see another outline of the same lizard man. It's identical, but there's more to it. It's not as misty looking.
That's right.
And then next to it, one that's solid.
Right.
And so, and these appear next to those spirals.
That's correct.
So it appears that what the Hohokam were telling us is that they come out of these energy portals and materialize.
Right.
That's what it looks like to me. I admit I'm in the 21st century. I'm looking at these ancient petroglyphs with 21st century eyes. But that is how it appears to me.
That's correct, and that's the story, and I have seen that many, many times. So I've seen them come and go from these rocks, and it's pretty spectacular. When they leave, Kevin, I really understand what the natives mean. I mean, I understand this now when they call them spirits, because they look like spirits when they leave the ground, or when they come into the, when they're about to go into the ground. They look like a ghost, okay? They look, you can see through them, you know? But mm-hmm. as they ascend up into the sky, they become more solid, all right? They shift shape, they become more solid, sometimes they change colors, and they don't quite move like, you know, something that we've seen before. So it's totally understanding on why the natives would call these spirits. And that interpretation of that rock that you were just describing there, that's exactly what is happening here.
And for those who missed the show when I had Thunderbeat on, she is a Native American shamaness, female shaman. I told her about your interpretation of these spirals being a marking of an energy portal. And she said, that is exactly right. That is exactly what that is. However, she said, if it ends with the end of the spiral going up, that means it is an exit from here to the sky, to the heavens. It's a portal into the heavens, which you had correctly stated. If it ends going down, it is a portal. You had told me it's a portal to enter into the earth. But here is something that was interesting. She said it can mean it is an arriving portal from the heavens.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it may not be just going into the ground, but it can be a portal coming from the heavens to that
right.
spot.
Right, exactly. It builds in that spot there. The energy creates the doorway. Here's something else that's interesting too, Kevin. Excuse me. In studying this and watching these creatures over the years, they pretty much pop up in the same spot. I mean, on a regular basis. I mean, you can pretty much predict them now on when they're going to show up, what season, what time. I mean, it's awesome. You just got to follow the sun. And here's something else that I've learned also. Now, on my website, petroglyphsinthesky.com, if you go to one of the links there that says, how can I see where can I see a UFO in Phoenix, Arizona? You click on that, it shows a map, okay? It's an old map, 1930s map. It could be older, I can't remember. But it shows, they documented all the canals, okay? They documented all the canals and also all the Indian mounds, all the Indian ruins throughout the valley. And in studying these creatures and the natives who dealt with them, it seemed like they wanted to get as close as possible as they could to these things. And this could explain, like, for instance, Montezuma's castle, all right? Now, we got this castle high up on a cliff, right? It's in a hole in a rock. And then sometimes there's a crack. There's a huge crack on the side of that cliff with a big, massive spiral in it, all right? And that spiral represents a doorway for these creatures. Now, if this is the case, if what I'm saying is true, then we could predict on where the hot spots are around the valley through the Indian ruins scattered throughout the ground here. I believe that they lived, like, for instance, when the spirals ended up, that means there's a porthole, there's a doorway in the sky there. So they would build their ruins, they would build their houses right, excuse me, under where these UFOs would be at. Now, how I came to that conclusion was in 2004. If you look on that map there, you'll notice off to the east side towards Ahwatukee, That was the major hot spot here in the valley, was over there in Ahwatukee. And that's where it was like a major populated city there. And it's also nowadays in 2000, I don't know when they put that power plant, but a power plant sits there today. And in 2004, I saw the lights doing neat formations right over that power plant there. And in studying this power plant is bored down into the fault line of South Mountain, which creates energy so we can turn on our lights and stuff. And when that power plant is active, it acts like a intergalactic gas station for these things, man. These things just pop up over this power plant. So is this a coincidence that, you know, I'm seeing the lights above the power plant, where the power plant was sitting right in the major populated area of Phoenix, Arizona at that time for the Holocoms? You see, so I believe that they lived right under these things. Now, living in Glendale, holy cow, Kevin, I got some major light orbs going on over there in Glendale, and it just so happens there was a major, you know, there's some cities over there. There were some ruins over there in that area, too.
So, for people who are not familiar with the Phoenix metro area, let me explain. He mentioned Ahwatukee. Ahwatukee is an area, part of Phoenix, that's on the... It's the southeast side,
yeah, mm-hmm,
of the county, and it's on the east side of South Mountain. Okay, now Glendale is on the west side, and sort of a little north and west. I'm in the part of the Phoenix metro area known as Mesa, and Mesa is on the east side of Phoenix, and right here in Mesa, there are Hohokam ruins that have been preserved in a little park right near the hospital. Okay, I'm going to open up the telephone lines because I know there are people who have questions or comments about all of this. And so the telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, the main number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by going to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message, and you can use that. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin and Jeff. This
yeah.
is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Jeff. I like your site a lot. There's quite a lot of interesting things on there. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, you know, you talk about all these different entities, you know, they come out of the same place, but they are not necessarily friendly to one another.
That's a very good question. You know, a colleague of mine was, we were discussing this very thing the other day. You know, I think me and Kevin, we were talking about the forces of good and the forces of evil earlier, and I really do think that, you know, these creatures with the four arms, I mean, sure, they could morph also. They could look like a white dot in the sky and then come down and turn themselves, you know, into a human or whatever to look like a human anyway. So what I'm starting to think, this is my own opinion because this is what I've seen. All right. Now, one day I saw the mountain release at least four or five of these creatures, and two of them were these white orbs, and three of them were black serpents, black snakes. They kind of look like fish, and sometimes they look like reptilian or like a serpent or whatnot. They were black, but these white orbs, it just seemed to be. Oh, let's see, watching what the other black serpents were doing. And this one black serpent, I mean, as all of them were going up into the sky, except for one, the one black serpent, he didn't want to leave. He wanted to stick around. He was taking off towards the southeast, towards Ahwatukee a little bit. And this white one cruises across his head, all right? And you can actually see it in the video there. It's called Serpent and the Orbs. It's on my website, petroglyphsonthesky.com. And you can see what I'm talking about. This white orb flies over his head, and he seems to look at the white orb and then look back at the white orb. Later on in that sighting, all right, this black serpent, he's moving up towards that white orb. Now, the white orb is not moving, okay? Now, this serpent is going up to this white orb, and then the serpent starts to move to the white orb's left. And if you look real closely, you can see it looks like a line or a tube, and it looks like the white orb is shooting a metal tube or something at this black serpent. And when that happens, the serpent moves away from the white orb and moves down and goes way down and then moves into position under the white orb. And the next thing I know, I've got a black serpent, a white orb, a black serpent, and another white orb all in a line of formation. Now, studying that sighting, watching what had just happened right now, it seemed to me that the white orb was putting the black orb in place, you know, in check, was putting that serpent in check, you see?
Yeah.
That's my only interpretation. So, and we were trying to distinguish, well, maybe, you know, the white ones are the good ones, and then, you know, maybe these black orbs that we're seeing are the bad ones. It's just really hard to tell right now. So I think we're dealing with two different types of entities here, you know, so.
I find it interesting, you know, like, you know, in history, you know, we have, you know, the snake, you know, and there is talk about, you know, serpents and or reptilians and stuff, you know, as far as evil in our religion. But as far as these other entities, you know, as far as I know, we don't have any other literature or anything on it except for stuff written on walls, you know, and
right.
The stories between from Indians.
Right.
And
yeah. All this information, all the way down to, I mean, please forgive me, but all the way down to like the Catholic Church. I mean, a lot of stuff has been misled, misinterpreted, and corrupted. You know, I mean, we should know about this right now. In my opinion, this is the biggest conspiracy of the world, is that these things are real and that the Indians, they know what they're talking about, and we should not take them and just say that they're just, you know, on peyote or something, and this is just a myth that they're just making all these crazy things up. This, in my opinion, because I've seen it, is real. It's true. You know, this is not a mess. What's going on here is happening all over the world, and I think it's only a matter of time. You know what? 2010. Hold on to your hats, folks, man. 2010 is we are going to see a lot of UFOs, and I think the government might have to come into play on this and explain what's about to happen. But according to some of these prophecies, like the Mayan calendar, 2010 is going to be a hotspot for UFOs, and I think there won't be a shadow of a doubt that we have been visited by something.
Terry,
I've been really interested in, reptilians and stuff, you know, just because of the religious aspect, you know, are they really real, and, you know, are they good or bad, you know, and I've been trying to, you know, research everything I can find about them, you know, on that.
Well, Terry, let me interject something, because, you know, what you're talking about is what religion has taught us about, you know, the various extraterrestrials, and there's very little. As you say, we've heard about this reptilian race, but from religion. But you're right. Religion hasn't said much about it, but the Bible does.
That's correct.
Okay, for instance, there are two races of extraterrestrials specifically named in the Bible. Okay, well, there's more, but there's two I'm going to talk about. The cherubim and the seraphim. All right, the cherubim, they are the ones that were, two of them were placed at the gate of the Garden of Eden with flaming swords that flashed in every direction to make sure that Adam and Eve did not go back in. All right, we'll forget about them for a minute. They certainly were not lovely little things with white wings. These were warriors. Okay? The seraphim. Now, the translation of the word seraphim means the flaming ones. Maybe that's the lighted orbs we're seeing.
Yeah,
it could be.
Because it means the flaming ones. And the, you know, angels appear in different forms in the Bible.
Yeah, they say they can take any form they want, pretty much, I guess.
That's right.
And there was one time where an angel inhabited a donkey and spoke to a prophet. The only way they could get the prophet to pay attention was a donkey was talking.
Yeah.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. That's toll-free anywhere in the United States or Canada. So if you've got a question or a comment for Jeff, those are the telephone numbers. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, Jeff, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
How y'all doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, Jeff, a while ago you said something about these. I'm not sure if I understood it right, whether they were the orbs or it was something else. They would be down on the ground and you didn't see them, but then when they would rise up into the air, they would be seen. Are we suggesting that possibly when they're on the ground that they are grounded and invisible, but when they break free that they can become visible?
That's a good question. Yeah, you know how some lizards, they like geckos, you know, they camouflage themselves to look, you know, to blend in, you know? And matter of fact, some of these pigs that we find up here on the mountains, you know, they stand still and they don't move until you get right up on them, you know, they think they're a bush. So, yeah, I do believe that
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll get the rest of that answer when we come back. And don't go away, folks. Back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we have, I hope, Mike still with us. You still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right, and we have Jeff Woolline. Jeff, you were answering a question, and we had to cut you off. So can these things turn invisible when they're on the ground?
Oh, yeah, I believe they can. And one of Jaime Masson's Skywatcher out there in Mexico, now what he did something very ingenious. He attached two cameras onto one tripod. One was on infrared, and then one was on regular. And he pointed it up into the sky. Now, to the naked eye, there wasn't anything in the sky. But to the infrared camera, it was showing an object that was in the sky. So, yes, I do believe that they're able to, let's say, cloak themselves, camouflage themselves, look like anything they want just to blend in. You know, they could even possibly look like a cloud. But also, I mean, now, I wouldn't have believed it unless I've seen it for myself and I videotaped it and stuff, you know. So, I mean, what we're dealing with here is something much, much greater, much higher than us. I mean, so what I'm about to say, it's not going to click with most people, but what I have seen is these things actually absorb themselves into the ground, okay? They also come and go out of trees. Now, when we look at some of the petroglyphs on the rocks up here, some of these deers, all right, now the antlers, okay, the Indians consider the deers sacred because of the antlers represent a sacred tree, okay? So these spirits are able to come and go from these trees. I've seen them many times do this, and they just seem to absorb. They just come right up out of the tree there, and then they just, I had one come up out of the tree, and he exploded into magical colors, like blue, green, red. I mean, it was just something else. It was like 4th of July during the daytime. I mean, sparklers, okay? And when they go into the ground, they first they're solid, and then they become more like a spirit, like a ghost. You can see through them. They kind of materialize. And then you'll see them, and then all of a sudden, boop, they're gone. And then when they come back, when they leave, the same thing. You'll be looking over there, nothing will be there. You go looking again, and something will be there, and it's leaving the mountain. And first you might think that it's like a bag or a balloon or something, but it's just the aura, you know, the shape to it. The energy that it's producing off this thing, man, you can clearly tell that this is something not normal. And as it ascends into the sky, it does look like a ghost, it does look like a spirit, and then as it gets higher, it starts to take more shape and become more solid. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike, does that answer your question?
Well, it appears then that, I've got one more comment and then one question, and that is that it appears these things are changing frequency and thus being able to mix with either the mountain or the tree or whatever.
Sure.
And
sure.
Wouldn't we say that in Moses seeing the burning bush on the top of the mount would have been basically the same thing?
You know, that's great. That's awesome. You know, you might have nailed it on the head there. Yeah, that's my opinion too. I really think that this burning bush was possibly a light in this bush, you know, like the Phoenix lights. You know, it could have been, you know, a fire, describe it as. But I believe that it was one of these, you know, creatures. Yes, because it clearly says that it helped them. A pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of cloud by night. Now, when that pillar of cloud stopped, they followed that thing, man. And when it stopped, they pitched camp. And sometimes that object wouldn't leave that sky for a year. And then when it started moving, that's when the Israelites knew it was time to move on. So clearly, something was in the sky that they were following. It's in the book of Numbers. It's all over the Bible there.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. Or toll free, 888-223-4599. You know, I showed a few pictures on our TV channel about the Hohokam, their buildings and so forth. There's not a lot of that left, folks. There's not a lot of it left around here. For one thing, most of their structures were adobe. Now, adobe is basically... A simplified explanation is you build a structure with some timbers, some trees. You just build the framework, and then you overlay it with a bunch of scrub brush and grass, and then you overlay that with clay. Okay, so those structures over hundreds of years basically melt away back into the soil. But some of their structures, as you've seen, were big, they were massive, they were made out of caliche, which is brick, basically. It's clay, but it hardens into a brick-like substance. Some of their structures were created out of stones, as you saw, and those are still standing. The caliche are still standing. But these were very ingenious people. They turned this desert into very productive farmland. And they were not hunters and gatherers. They were a city-dwelling and small-town-dwelling civilization. As I said earlier, Jeff, and I think it's very interesting, their primary city, the name of it translates to Snake Town. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, it all boils down to the serpent, you know. Same thing, Quetzalcoatl, Mexico, and the pyramid with the serpent god there.
Here's another thing that's interesting about these people. Their language, and even the language spoken today by the Pima, who say that they are descendants of the Hohokam, and maybe they are, that's not absolutely established, but maybe they are. Their language is a dialect of Uto Aztec.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, let's not forget the Aztecs, Kevin. I mean, the Hohokam and the Mayans were here in Phoenix. I mean, look at the Mexican population now. You know, so clearly the Mayans in Mexico had a lot of influence here with the Hohokam. I find Mayan art all over the rock here on the mountains.
Well, and the, of course, the Aztec civilization comes after the Mayan, but the in the pictures that I showed, you can see these windows that are T-shaped.
Oh, right, yeah.
And those T-shaped windows, let me see if I can, yeah. For those who are watching our TV channel, you can see T-shaped windows. They're not rectangular, and you know, they're kind of T-shaped.
That's right.
Now, that is something that you find in the Aztec culture.
That's correct.
Now, the importance of that would be this. We get told by standard establishment archaeology that and paleontology that the first Native Americans came across a land bridge that no longer exists across what is, we call it, the Bering Strait. And they would have first arrived in the very northern extremes, Alaska, northern Canada, that area. And then they began to migrate down into the rest of what is today Canada and the United States, and eventually migrate down into Mexico and continue to migrate further and down into Central America and then South America. That is the progression that we are given by standard archaeology today. However, the most advanced civilizations among all the peoples in Americas, in the Americas, the most advanced civilizations obviously are the oldest ones. They had longer to advance. And they're in South America. They're not in North America. They're in South America. And here we have the Hohokam speaking a dialect of Uto Aztec. It would seem to me to be reasonable, based upon the linguistics, that they migrated from the south up into this area, not the other way around. It would seem that they came from either Central or South America and up into this area, since they are using the language of the Aztecs, or a dialect of it. And why would that be important? Well, because the Aztec, the Maya, the Inca, all of those people in their art that they left behind, and in artifacts that have been found in their ruins and ruins of their civilization, there is indication that they did have contact, that they were trading with these other nations that are on the other side of the world. In Egypt, they found mummies that had traces of cocaine. Well, where does cocaine come from? South America. You follow what I'm saying? In Egypt.
Oh, that's correct. You know, we can trace that criteria to the pottery shards also, because some of these pottery shards, the dirt doesn't match the existing landscape here in the valley here, and some of these pots that they would trade, here on South Mountain would come from, you know, clear across on the other side of the United States. So this was a hot spot. Phoenix was a major hot spot for not only trading, but for spiritual belief and sacrifice. So this was a mountain of mercy, Mount Sopoa. That's what they used to call South Mountain, Mountain of Mercy. And they would take their prisoners here, and they would literally sacrifice them for the gods, for, in my opinion, these Phoenix Lights. So.
All right, now, Jeff, human sacrifice is something that lots and lots of people really didn't want to believe was going on with the Mayan, the Inca, the Aztec, and yet now we know for sure it was.
That's right.
We know for sure it was. And so if this group that we call the Hohokam migrated up from the Aztec areas, if that's where they came from, it would seem reasonable that they would have brought that religion with them, and that includes human sacrifice. Have you found any evidence, anything at all, that indicates that human sacrifice was taking place out here on South Mountain? And we'll let you answer that when we come back from this break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. We have time for one, maybe two more calls at 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. We're talking with Jeff Woolline, and Jeff, we were talking about the fact that the Hohokam, who inhabited what is today Phoenix and the entire valley, and really all up to the edge of what is the Navajo Nation today, and as far south as Tucson, the Hohokam language is a dialect of Uto Aztec, which means apparently that they must have migrated from the south to this area, bringing with them, of course, their religion, and the religion includes human sacrifice. And I had asked the question, have you discovered any evidence at all on South Mountain that would indicate they practice human sacrifice?
Yeah, I believe that they have. I have found at least two altars up there that describes it perfect. If you look on my film Phoenix Lights in the Lost City of Cibola, I show an altar type setting there where it looks like the rock has been chiseled out to perform sacrifice, and it's very interesting because it's along a dried up stream, water stream there. And when we study this, we come to find out that they would purify themselves first with water before they would, you know, perform the sacrifice. So this altar, not only is it facing towards the eastern sky on where these things mostly come and go from, because on South Mountain here we find more rock art on the east side than we do the west, and that's basically where I was seeing these things at, is on the east side there. And not only is it faced towards that general area and the streamline bed, but the what looks like dried blood dripping from the stone there. So there's a lot of evidence to suggest that there was more going on to what the archaeologist has led us to believe, that these Hohokam people were just a simple, peace-loving people making pots And I think the story in this goes a lot deeper than that.
Now, when you say dried blood on the stone, you're not actually talking about dried blood, but you're talking about stains on the stone that look like blood.
That's correct. Yeah. And
because after hundreds of years, the actual dried blood would be gone, but the stain on the stones could stay.
You can see that on the Mayan pyramids there, you know, as they toss the bodies down the stairs and all the stain. You know, some of the pictures that we see from Mexico, they only depict like one side of the pyramid, but when you go on the other side of the pyramid, it's like a bloody mess there. So...
Yeah, that doesn't that wouldn't make a very good picture to put on a travel poster. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, Jeff, we've taken a look at all of this from a whole different perspective tonight than we ever have before. We've looked at these people, and I think that look, America's ancient history is as rich and is as mysterious as anything we've ever heard from Egypt or from Sumeria or any of those other ancient civilizations. We just never hear about it here. No one ever really delves into this and really talks about it. When you've got people that can build buildings like what we have just looked at tonight and what we've talked about, you're not dealing with dummies here. You're dealing with people that are technologically, architecturally advanced, especially for the times in which they lived. And how many things, think of this, folks, how many things were built this year that are still going to be standing 500 years from now? Not too many. And yet some of these buildings that we looked at tonight were built and abandoned more than 500 years ago, and they're multi-storied buildings. And we looked at one that's at least four stories tall. Two of them, actually, that are at least four stories tall, still standing. And the people just disappeared. Jeff, we've only got a few minutes left. Why do you think these people disappeared?
Well, not only in talking with some of the tribes people here, it's very hard to get, you know, a true Native American, at least here in the city of Phoenix, to actually talk about these things because of their past, because of what had happened to their past. And some of them goes to say that the story says that these things got upset, you know, for some unforetold reason, the sacrificing had stopped. And the spirits got uneasy, they got upset, and they say that a devil came from the east and took these people away. And that kind of coincides with what the rock art depicts up here, is these creatures picking people up by their heads. And not only that, but they're actually interacting with these creatures. They would have acrobats, like perform acrobats in the sky. They would hang from barbells and fly with these creatures. Where they took them, heavens only knows. But this is what the rock art depicts. So if we are supposed to take this literally, that these things took people away, then that would explain on why we can't find where they went and the reason why they left all their belongings. Because when me and you move, we take our stuff with us. But yet, these people, they didn't. They left all their belongings here and just simply disappeared. So that would suggest, you know, something catastrophic might have happened for these people, you know, just to disappear like this.
There is, among Native Americans, a legend. And in fact, in many of the various Native American tribes, they have their own version of this, where ancient ancestors moved below the surface of the earth and live in caverns under the earth. Do you think it is possible that they did that, that the Hohokam did that? Or do you think that they encountered trouble with these entities and were wiped out or taken away by these entities? Which do you think is the most likely?
Well, there's a couple points here I'd like to make real quick. I think things were peaceful when they first started interacting with these things. But something went wrong. Who knows what went wrong, but something went wrong, and the spirits, these things, they, you know, ended up taking these people away.
Jeff, we have less than a minute, so you'll have to come to a conclusion pretty quick.
Well, I think that, that these things, something did go wrong, so there's so much to go into, Kevin.
It could be possible both of those are true.
Yeah.
That when whatever it is went wrong between the entities and the Native Americans, and the entities began attacking, it could be some of those Native Americans did go underground.
Yes.
And some
yes.
were carried away.
That's right. But there were people that survived this. Now, some of them did hide in caves. This legend says that the people, when this was going on...
All right. We've hit the end of the show. All right, folks, that's a wrap for this evening. That's a wrap for this week, and I hope you've enjoyed it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.